X Talks connects professionals in the life science, medical device, and food industries with useful content like webinars, job openings, articles, and virtual meetings to help you succeed in your career. This Life Science Focus podcast brings together some of our editorial staff to share insights into the latest B2B industry news to keep you up to date. This week on the show, we are discussing how well the current COVID-19 vaccines work against Omicron and BBI vaccines FDA approval for hepatitis B shot. Enjoy the show.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the X-Talks Life Science Podcast. I'm Aisha Rashid, Senior Life Science Journalist at xtalks.com, and this week I'm joined by Sydney Perlmutter, Mira Nabulsi, and Vera Kovacevic. Thanks for coming today. So I'm going to start off today by talking a little bit about some of the statements that came out from COVID-19 vaccine makers like Pfizer and Moderna last week regarding Omicron. So Moderna kind of came under a lot of heat after its chief executive officer actually made some statements saying that it's unlikely that the COVID-19 vaccines currently will be effective against Omicron. And so this led to kind of a lot of public concern, and obviously so. So a couple of days later, Moderna's president, Stephen Hoge, appeared on CNN to clarify the comments made by Moderna's CEO. And he said that some of the word choices that were used may not have been optimal. However, he did still stick to the fact that saying that it's likely that the Omicron variant will make a dent in all vaccine efforts. And that's why Moderna is planning to make a variant-specific booster against Omicron. Similarly, we also heard from Pfizer that they're also gearing up to make a variant-specific booster against Omicron in 100 days. So the Omicron variant, of course, continues to be detected in a growing number of countries around the world. Also, there's new evidence showing that Omicron might have been present in Europe at least 11 days before it was first identified in South Africa. And it could have even been spreading across Europe for 2 or 3 months before that, so since October, let's say. And of course, this brings to question some of the travel bans that were put in place against countries in Southern Africa. As we talked about in the previous podcast, I think South Africa has amongst the most sophisticated infectious diseases monitoring and research programs in the world because it routinely has to deal with other infectious diseases on the continent. And so that's why, given their very strong infrastructure dealing with infectious diseases, they were able to not only lead in COVID-19 vaccine research and trials, but also in identifying new variants of COVID-19. In addition to vaccines, Pfizer also said that its antiviral Paxlovid will also be another useful tool in fighting against COVID-19, including variants like Omicron. So recently, it released data showing that the antiviral was able to reduce hospitalization and deaths by almost 90% in trials, and Pfizer's hoping to get authorization for the drug from the FDA shortly. And so Pfizer also made the comment regarding its vaccine, saying that Pfizer's CEO said that it predicts annual COVID-19 shots could be the new reality for many years to come. So again, this also sparked a lot of public concern. And then there's also the question of companies like Pfizer and Moderna really setting in to make a lot of money from these vaccines. So in an interview with the BBC, Pfizer CEO Albert Bourla was questioned about the $35 billion that Pfizer is projected to make from the sales of its COVID-19 vaccine this year. So what he said was that, well, the vaccines are saving lives and profits only provide incentive for further scientific innovation. So he was quite unapologetic in saying that profits are to be made and expected. So Pfizer will have delivered 3 billion doses of its mRNA vaccine by the end of the year, and it plans to produce 4 billion for next year. So I just wanted to actually get your thoughts. Number one, we've talked a lot about, you know, sensationalist headlines, and now we also see what I kind of think are somewhat premature, well, actually very premature, but somewhat irresponsible comments as well from, you know, the CEOs of companies like Pfizer and Moderna. But I wanted to ask, what are your thoughts on the big money at stake here? And do you think that, you know, these CEOs pushing for things like boosters and now variant-specific boosters, I mean, the intention, we hope, of course, is good there, because, you know, these are life-saving vaccines. As I think one of the CEOs said, of course, we're grateful that we have them. But there is also some public skepticism and mistrust of pharma in general. So do you think statements like this and pushing for, you know, more vaccinations prematurely, well, what kind of light does this shed on them?
Yeah, I think earlier this week, Aisha, you and I spoke about this a little bit.
I was just going to bring this up, Mira, because this got me thinking, because we had a conversation and you brought it up. Forgot to mention that about what Moderna's CEO said, and you were so concerned, and I heard that in your voice, and I was like, I need to sort of address this in this piece. So sparked that for me. Yeah.
No, honestly, so he obviously came out with a statement to CNN, and he kind of went around the corner to say, you know, the vaccines that they currently offer will get a big hit in the efficacy. And I thought that was a bit premature, because already the world was freaking out. So everyone's freaking out. The WHO is telling everyone to calm down. And then Moderna comes out there and says this. And there's no data that he could use to represent his statement. Obviously, if we know, you know, that the efficacy is going to drop, then a statement like this would actually comfort everyone, knowing that, you know, a booster is coming in March. But when you say it like that on CNN and everyone starts to react and countries start to close their borders and the WHO is telling them, don't close your borders, it makes it worse for the, you know, for the virus and things like that, I was more concerned than just hearing the word Omicron sensationalized all over the news, you know? So that was my initial thought on it. But now I think after that statement has come out, things have calmed down a little. I think countries maybe are starting to breathe and just waiting to see what will happen in the next 2 weeks as they test, you know, the current vaccine with the Omicron variant. Hopefully we hear good news. But yeah, I thought that was pretty premature of Moderna. And then obviously, you know, Pfizer had to come out and do something too. So it just became like a whole publicity thing, in my opinion.
Yeah, I totally agree. And luckily, you know, you are very on top of this subject, and then you can educate us about this subject. So we have that skepticism, but some people will take it at face value if they hear that. And that's really worrisome, because, yeah, like I said, not everyone is going to do that deep research and have the thought to think, oh, no, this is a little bit premature. So I think he needs, or the CEOs need better media training, and they also need to be, you know, like, they just have to really take a step back and, like, just remember what this is all about and how many times that, like, we've, not we've been wrong, but we've made predictions that haven't necessarily been right. So I guess we have been wrong. So yeah, there's just, like, this is just, like, yet another step in this whole, you know, trying to end COVID thing. And I don't think it's going to be the last.
I agree that perhaps the statement from the CEO of Moderna was a little bit premature. And I also wonder to myself, like, who advised him to say this? Did anyone even advise him to say that? Yeah. So that was my first thought, because I know that CEOs have a lot of people, you know, on the daily basis advising them what kind of things they should say, what kind of things they should not say. So my first question was, which scientist advised him to say that, and based off of what data? So yes, I understand it was quite surprising to everyone. I also want to point out that when did the news about Omicron come out? I think it was November 25th.
The 26th.
Okay, so it hasn't been a full 2 weeks yet, which means that, you know, COVID hospitalizations lag new infections by 2 weeks or more. So we're not even sure exactly, you know, what is the, like, how deadly Omicron is or how dangerous Omicron is compared to the other strains. So we're not even sure of that question. I think definitely in the next week or two, there's going to be a lot more data about that. Yeah, so I also think regarding how transmissible Omicron is compared to Delta, we are still not sure. There's some studies going on about that as well, but we won't know probably in a week or two.
Absolutely. And I think this is the whole conversation around why all of these kinds of statements have been so premature. And yeah, I think science communication is super important, especially during these times. I don't know who was advising these CEOs or not about before they went off to, you know, make these kinds of statements. Maybe it was just in the sheer excitement of the science and just having these vaccines to work with, maybe the CEOs and, you know, they got caught up in all of that, but they have to understand that, you know, there are, you know, actual people out there and that you need to communicate to them in a manner that is scientific and reassuring and based on, and is evidence-based. And yeah, and to your point, in terms of hospitalizations, yes, they do lag in terms of the new infections and hospitalizations. So we still don't know. Although South Africa, cases have been going up like crazy. I think they have like a 12% positivity rate or something at the moment. So it's pretty crazy there. But again, I'm not sure whether the cases are severe. We've been hearing that a lot of them have been mild. So again, premature to say, but those are all things to consider as well. And yeah, I mean, it's big pharma. You already have people already skeptical of these vaccines saying, well, they're, you know, these big pharma companies are just in it to make money and it's a conspiracy. I'm not even talking about the conspiracies, but that's also a thing. Even though, you know, the vaccines are free for people in the U.S. and, of course, here in Canada, but I'm not sure if they are, they're being offered at cost to, you know, all countries, but I don't know if people in other countries have to pay for them if they don't have insurance, or in developing countries, I'm not sure where the situation is. But yeah, the fact is that these companies are out to make a lot of money from these vaccines, and they say that they have to because it drives innovation. Like, what are your kind of thoughts on that? Like, is that a trust issue with pharma in general?
I definitely 100% support that, you know, the money they make, they have deserved it, because I imagine there are scientists working around the clock to produce these vaccines, and I imagine a lot of effort was put into that. And in the future, if we have another pandemic, which hopefully won't happen in our lifetime, but if there is, you know, we need the pharma companies to make vaccines for us. So in the future, the question is, well, who's going to make it, right? And the answer is, well, the pharmaceutical companies that, you know, are driving research and innovation in this field. So I agree with the CEO of Pfizer's statement that it helps drive innovation. I think it is important, you know, the funding and the money to pay for this research and development needs to come from somewhere. So I understand the business side of it. Another thing I want to mention is I do kind of applaud and agree with the statements by the vaccine makers about them showing confidence that they can maybe change existing formulations around a little bit to make the shots more effective against new variants. I think those kind of statements that show their confidence to develop a new vaccine that's more tailored towards another COVID variant, I don't think that kind of statement is premature. I think that's welcome and kind of reassuring to people. So what are your thoughts about that?
Yeah, I think it's definitely a great thing that they're like, okay, well, we are working on a variant-specific booster. They did the same thing when Delta came around, which was fine. You know, people are expecting that and hoping for that for sure. But then, you know, the add-ons in terms of, well, the current vaccines are just not probably going to work, and then we're going to need vaccines for many, many years. All of that stuff, I think, was unnecessary at this point. All right, so I'm going to move on to another story about another vaccine. So a pharmaceutical company called VBI Vaccines recently got FDA approval for its very first vaccine, which is a 3-antigen hepatitis B shot. So the FDA approved this hepatitis B vaccine, which is called PreHevbrio, and it's approved for the prevention of hepatitis B infection caused by the hepatitis B virus, or HBV, in adults 18 years of age and older. Now, this new vaccine is the only approved 3-antigen HBV vaccine for adults in the U.S. It contains three specific surface antigens that are found on the hepatitis B virus. So the approval comes really at the onset of an expected expansion of the hepatitis B vaccine market. And this especially after a CDC advisory committee endorsed hepatitis B vaccination for all adults between the ages of 19 to 59. So currently, the current guidance before this new endorsement was that adults may get the vaccine while high-risk individuals should get it. However, the advisory committee recommendation is now more universal for recommending all adults to get the vaccine. So PreHevbrio will be joining several other shots in the hepatitis B vaccine arena, including a vaccine from Dynavax, from GSK, and as well as Merck. So we don't hear about hepatitis B too often, but it has infected more than 295 million people worldwide, and it's estimated that 80,000 Americans will acquire the infection every year. Now, according to the World Health Organization, hepatitis B led to 820,000 deaths worldwide in 2019, with most caused by cirrhosis and hepatocellular carcinoma, or primary liver cancer. And the hepatitis B virus is the leading cause of liver disease, and it's difficult to cure with current treatments, and many patients then go on to develop liver cancers. So the WHO has a goal of eliminating hepatitis B around the world by 2030, under its Sustainable Development Agenda. So the FDA approval for the VBI vaccine hepatitis B shot was based on data from two phase 3 trials, and the trials evaluated the vaccine against the monovalent Engerix B vaccine. So as I mentioned, this vaccine is a 3-antigen vaccine, and that one is just a 1-antigen. And results from the trials showed that the PreHevbrio vaccine from VBI offered higher seroprotection rates compared with the Engerix B vaccine in adults 18 years of age and older. Now, before the FDA approval, this vaccine was only approved in Israel. Also, other issues around hepatitis B, disease awareness is low, and that results in it often going undiagnosed. And it's estimated that like 32% of adults with chronic infection are not even aware of their infection status. Also, rates of vaccination among adults remains low at around 25% for adults 19 and older. So the proportion of kids, though, under 5 years of age Chronic hepatitis B infections fell to under 1% from around 5% before vaccinations were introduced for children in, like, I think the late 80s to the early 2000s. So I just wanted to get your thoughts on this new vaccine. We've obviously been talking a lot about the COVID-19 vaccines. So this is another one. And I kind of wanted to get your thoughts in general about, are you guys more aware of your vaccinations or what vaccinations you should be getting or should you have gotten for yourself, for your family members, for your friends? Do you think more about vaccines in general, I would say?
That's a great question, especially as, you know, a lot of us got vaccines as kids and we don't know what the where the records are of those because our parents would have been dealing with them or we don't even live in the same place that we used to where we got them. So definitely did get me thinking about what else am I, you know, protected against. And with regards to this new vaccine, is this something that people will have to do proactively? And let's say if they already have another, like, hepatitis vaccine, will that affect how they react to the vaccine?
I'm not sure if, like, if people have already gotten vaccinated that they will be need to get this vaccine. I think it's just another vaccine to add to the mix of the existing hepatitis B vaccines.
I see.
And, like, you know, we're in flu season right now, and I think maybe we talked about this before, but, you know, I personally have never gotten the flu shot, which is terrible. But it got me thinking, I'm like, I should get the flu shot this year or, you know, thinking about shots for, like, my parents, like the shingles or shot or the pneumonia vaccine for my parents. Those are things I had never considered before. For me, I think really all of this talk around vaccines during COVID has kind of made me more, I guess, cognizant of our vaccination status.
Yeah, I was going to say something similar. So I recently started my course of HPV vaccines. And this is something, you know, women should do under the age of 27. But I was never really exposed to the idea of getting an HPV vaccine until I walked into clinic one day and saw a pamphlet. So it made me more aware of, like, things that I actually need to keep tabs on because I'm no longer, like you said, a child where my parents are, like, you know, keeping me up to date with the vaccine, with the vaccines. And obviously, like, when you go and ask them, oh, did I get this vaccine? They have no idea because this was 20 years ago. So yeah, it's definitely made me more cautious of what vaccines I should be taking, what boosters I should be taking. A lot of things that we took as children are overdue for boosters now. And, you know, my files are lost somewhere. And you just don't know. So definitely, I think COVID brought up the idea of vaccines as quite important in people's lives. And personally, I've been starting to keep tabs of things, you know, trying to find out where my records are, trying to understand more about my vaccines and things like that. So, yeah, I think it's definitely important and it's good to be talking about them.
Yeah, there's lots of vaccines that, you know, are for very serious conditions and diseases that need a booster shot, like, for example, the tetanus vaccine.
Yeah.
I think that one needs a booster shot every 10 years. And I realized that because one day I think I hit my hand against a nail and I was like, oh my gosh, I need to Google this. And then I read that, you know, oh, you should make sure your tetanus vaccine is up to date. And then it said, like, you know, a booster is recommended every 10 years, I believe. And so I checked my vaccination records and I went to my family doctor and I got the booster. But, you know, this is something I didn't even know that needs to be done until I had an incident happen and then I had to research it. So, yeah, I think definitely now with the COVID vaccinations, I think people are more aware of their vaccination status for other conditions as well.
Yeah, that's a great thing. I think I remember a couple of years ago, just out of the blue, you know, at a family doctor, at my annual checkup with my family doctor, she's like, okay, let's check for rubella. She's like, oh, you need a booster anyway, so it's okay. Like, check for rubella antibodies. And I was like, what are you talking about? Like, what booster? When? Where? How? And then she's like, oh, you need a booster now. I'm like, okay. Like, there's no lead up to it. There's no education around it, really. So it's interesting, but I think this new era that COVID has brought in, I think people will be a lot more vaccine aware.
Yes. I have one more question, Aisha, back to the hepatitis B vaccine, the new one that was approved for the company VBI Vaccines. So my question is, if most people receive the hepatitis B vaccine at birth, and this new hepatitis B vaccine by VBI Vaccines, I believe it's only approved for adults.
For adults, yeah.
So, you know, if most people already got the hepatitis B vaccine at birth, then what do we expect the market to be like for this new vaccine that was recently approved?
So vaccination for kids only began, as I mentioned, in like the late 80s. You know, we had those, I remember when I was in like, yeah, elementary school, that's kind of when it started. You know, you got your three-dose regimen in school. So it was new back then. I think that was the 90s, though. Yeah, that was the 90s. Mid-90s or something. So, but before that, the generations previous to that, who are, you know, very much adults now, they did not get vaccinated. So this is to really address that population. And that's why the WHO has this target of completely eliminating HBV or hepatitis B infection by 2030 through vaccines. So we, we'll look forward to that. And with that, that's the end of this episode of the X-Talks Life Science Podcast. If you liked today's show, don't forget to rate, review, and subscribe. Thanks, everyone, and see you next week.
Bye.
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 Thanks for listening to the X-Talks Life Science Podcast. If you enjoyed our discussions today, please share the episode with your friends and colleagues, and be sure to subscribe in order to be notified when a new episode is released. To join in on the discussion, you can find X-Talks on social media, email podcast@xtalks.com, or comment on the articles directly. Links are in the show description. Take a moment to join our community at xtalks.com to get access to everything we have to offer, including webinars, job listings, virtual meetings, articles, and more. The views and opinions expressed in the podcast are those of the speakers sharing them. They should not be taken as professional advice and do not necessarily reflect the policy or position Honeycomb Worldwide. For further information, email us at podcast@xtalks.com. Thanks for joining us, and we'll see you next week.